This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
In fiction, in science fiction and fantasy, generally speaking, against allegory. It's said that Sauron is allegorical for Stalin.
That's a highlight way of using allegory, is forcing someone to see a disagreeable perspective.
Is it more true that all stories are either allegories or very hidden allegories? To ask if orcs are communists is, to me, as sensible as asking if communists are orcs. Welcome back, everybody, to another Tudor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
Or is Austin and Richard an allegory for friend and foe? You decide by the end of this what it actually means. What is our intent with this? What is anything? Because allegory, we're going to talk about basically what allegory is. And the question we have in the title is, does allegory belong in fiction?
Yep.
We're going to answer definitively if it belongs or not. And it's a little complicated, so we'll break it down a little bit. But first, what is allegory?
Tell me, man.
Oh, okay.
Give it to me.
The definition, if you just look up on Google what allegory is, it says, allegory is a story, poem, or picture that can be interpreted to reveal a hidden meaning, typically a moral or political one.
Yes.
Now, to get more specifically, allegory generally is a tool used to make a direct analogy of something in the book represents something in real life. That is typically what it is, and this could be used for several purposes. One, it could be used in order to talk about something in a more sensitive way about it, or a more approachable way. Approach the topic without actually talking about the topic. That's one reason to do it. Another couple are here, like provide social commentary. It's obviously another big reason. And it can simplify ideas of, hey, here's how you simplify this idea that's more complicated. Well, here's an analogy that I can use it as an allegory. And again, those aren't the same terms, but it's one of the examples there.
The colloquial difference between that normally people talk about with allegory. Allegory is a reference, and there's a difference between a reference and an inspiration. And so from the thumbnail, you have Tolkien and you have C.S. Lewis, the divide between them of C.S. Lewis would use allegory of, you know, Aslan is Jesus. He is God. It's an allegory. Exactly. That is what the point is. Versus Tolkien used part of the Lord of the Rings and the stories around it and the world building is inspired on his faith and also his culture and all these different, there are influences, but it's not anything specific one-to-one.
That is, and that's what Tolkien famously despised allegory.
Yeah.
And what the allegory Tolkien is talking about is the one-to-one comparison, where, for example, this is a fun thing I didn't know beforehand, but Jesse of the Shire on YouTube, I found this out watching her video on this. It's really great. And there was a Swedish translated version of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yes. I do remember this.
Yeah, there's a Swedish version, and in the foreword or the section in the beginning where it's talking about, hey, just to get you ready for this book, it said that Sauron is allegorical for Stalin.
Oh, interesting.
It said that in the translation.
Yeah.
In this Swedish version.
I was remembering something else. So
in this it said Sauron is allegorical for Stalin. Now, first off, he wrote this. Anyways, besides the historical context, it doesn't make sense. Yeah. Doesn't make sense. Tolkien responds to this and says, I utterly repudiate any such reading, which angers me. The situation was conceived long before the Russian Revolution. Such allegory is entirely foreign to my thought. So that was his response to this being put in the Swedish translated version. Mm-hmm. And Tolkien also went on to say, in general, this is a separate conversation. This wasn't about the Swedish translation. But this is the quote you'll hear a lot when Tolkien's giving his thoughts on allegory. It's quoted a lot. He says, I cordially dislike allegory in all its manifestations and always have done so since I grew old and wary enough to detect its presence. I much prefer history, true or feigned, with its varied applicability to the thought and experience of readers. I think that many confuse applicability with allegory, but the one resides in the freedom of the reader and the other in the purposed domination of the author.
I don't know. You're starting to get a little bit
death of the author territory. Are we gonna talk about it?
Who knows? we're always itching to talk about it, but no, yeah. Resist for now.
What he's saying though, that is key though. It's about the allegory. Really is about the author saying, "Hey, this represents this. Aslan is Jesus, or this is this."
Or we have some other modern day examples but still like more recent examples of books we've read, which what The Lions of Al-Rassan is allegorical for the conflict between Jews, Muslims, and Christians in Spain, basically. And so like it is allegorical. It is close to one-to-one with minor fictional historical changes. So, but it works in that one. Now, to answer the ultimate question, what do you think? Does allegory belong in fiction? Do you like it? Do you not like it?
Now, where do you stand? The boring answer is depends.
Right? Of course.
Here's an example of allegory where it's the entire story is Animal Farm. Take George Orwell's Animal Farm. The allegory there, it's these animals that are, and the whole story is about communism.
Yeah, basically.
And it's showing this is George Orwell's thought experiment, and it's this novel experiment of, hey, here's the allegory, here's the allegory. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't read the book in 15 years, so I can't remember it very much. Or how long ago? I read it in high school. It's been a while. Wow. How long has it been? It's been at least over a decade by now.
Yeah.
So I remember reading it, but being forced to, and not really, just reading it so that I could do well on the quiz that would be asked about it. But so I would have to reread it. But there's a story like that where I remember liking it, yeah. No. There's a story like that where it is a direct, hey, the entire purpose of this is to talk about a real world issue in this book, right?
Yeah.
The entire structure is allegory. So what do you think about something like that where, less than, hey, this specific thing represents this in real life versus the entire book is basically an allegory?
I think allegory works really well when it uses an extreme. If it is allegorical for something more tame, like important but less energetic or tame or more mundane, using an allegory in a fictional story to elevate it and make it more absurd, heightened, elevate the actual event, I think is a great use of allegory. Where I start to be more, I would agree more with Tolkien, is if the allegory does not particularly shift anything, if it doesn't add some type of novelty to the thing it is referencing, if it's, same level of intensity. That's kind of where I'm at.
What Tolkien really hated, here's another thing he said. He says this: there's no symbolism or conscious allegory in my story. Allegory of the sort, such as five wizards equals five senses, is wholly foreign to my way of thinking. There were five wizards, and that is just a unique part of history. To ask if orcs are communists is to me as sensible as asking if communists are orcs. Tolkien has a way with words.
This is all rooted in Tolkien's main goal of trying to create a secondary world. And to bake a secondary world, it has to be not ours. Like it is not connected. It is separated from our world.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't make a secondary world if it's dependent on the historical realism of ours.
Yes.
So it for him, I imagine it's just more world breaking. It's immersion breaking for you. Mm-hmm. And that's not his goal.
Definitely not his goal. Even at the same time where he has this, this will be the last Tolkien quote, then we can keep mm-hmm. talking about the whole thing here, just for all the context. People will say, well, isn't this Tolkien walking back on his words of he hates allegory, but at the same time he admits this in one of his letters where he says, "The Lord of the Rings is, of course, a fundamentally religious and Catholic work, unconsciously so at first, but consciously in revision. That is why I have not put in or have cut out practically all references to anything like religion, to cults or practices in the imaginary world. For the religious element is absorbed into the story and the symbolism. However, that is very clumsily put and sounds more self-important than I feel. For as a matter of fact, I have consciously planned very little and should chiefly be grateful for having been brought up, since I was 8, in a faith that has been nourished, that has nourished me and taught me all the little that I know, and I owe that to my mother, who clung to her conversion and dying young, largely through her hardships of poverty resulting from it." Yeah. So I'm talking about his influence and the symbolism in the story of his upbringing.
I think there's definitely a direct difference between his inspiration and the symbolism that emanates from that versus a one-to-one allegorical references. And so I think that's kind of what he means. But mm-hmm. actually, did you know that there is very specifically at least one allegory that Tolkien has in his Lord of the Rings?
What's that?
The characters Beren and Luthien are allegorical representatives of him and his wife. They are actually supposed to be the love story between
that is
his
them.
Wife and him. Yes.
Huh.
That is why on his on both of their tombstones, it's Beren and Luthien.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Wow. I got to see it. It was really great.
So he broke his rule for his wife.
Yeah.
That's kind of cute.
Yeah. So go ahead. If you're interested in reading just an awesome Tolkien love story, Beren and Luthien. It's neat. Fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that question about allegory. So you asked me, and I said it does. It depends. Would you say it depends as well? Because you're saying more of the extreme examples of the animal farm where everything's taken as an allegory. I guess, how do you take Narnia? Where do you see that as an extreme example? Or does that bother you when you read a Narnia-type story?
I think allegory comes at the cost of immersion. And if with the loss of immersion you get something more interesting to think about, then okay, maybe it's a worthy trade. But if it isn't, then you just lost immersion for nothing. That's kind of where I'm standing on it. I'll be honest, I'm not... I think I read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe when I was much, much younger. Mm. Or at the very least, my parents read it to me. So I don't have a strong connection to that series. But it would probably take me out of it a little bit. It just depends. Does that allegory intrigue me enough that it's worth the breaking of immersion?
Mm.
How do you see it? Do you lean one way or the other? Because I would agree with you. Basically, every answer on this channel and every question we ask, the answer is actually it depends. Mm. It always is. Ugh. I know. It sickens me too.
It That's really why sickens me. It's so stupid.
I will take the stance of it is a generally no. Allegory does not belong in fiction unless you make up for it in some way. Like, it is a determinant.
So unless,
it's a negative.
It's no unless yes.
It's no
you
unless yes.
That's what you just said, you bastard. Yeah.
Well, no, here's the thing. It is, inspiration is only positive versus allegory is a negative. It's just, what do you buy with it?
Okay, what I buy with it is a $10 subscription to our Patreon. If you want to join us, it's just $10. Link in the description down below if you want to join, where we do a book club every single month, and go check that out.
That's the worst segue you've done.
My conscious thought is going into 2026 to make the most unhinged transitions into the Patreon mention.
You're off to a great start.
Because I was, okay, complete side tangent. Honeymoon, I'm going to Germany and doing a Central Europe road trip. Can't wait for it. And in Berlin, going to visit the Berlin Wall Memorial and all sorts of historical sites and museums. Mm-hmm. And there's this plaque where the Führer bunker was where Hitler committed suicide and the history around that. Going to stop there and see that as well. And I was watching this video, which, man, the FBI is going to be after me. I was watching this video on the, you know, Hitler's last days, 15-minute thing of what was Hitler doing at that time.
Yeah.
And I was watching this.
So you could emulate. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. And then, like, 6 minutes into the video, it makes the just hardest core transition into an ad I've ever seen. It went from, you know, and speaking of the Fuhrer, it went straight from just talking about Hitler and committing suicide to an ad read. I don't even know what the company was. I was laughing as the ad was happening, going, what just happened?
And speaking of the Fuhrer, our sponsor, Booger Sugar.
What is that?
Cocaine.
Oh.
It's another fun, friendly name for, you know, if your bathroom is feeling a little slow and run down, add a bowl of Booger Sugar to the bathroom. Hitler approved.
So Booger Sugar is an allegory for cocaine.
Not technically correct, but we'll let it, we'll
I'm just
let
trying
it go.
To transition us back.
Yeah,
I'm
sure we can try.
Yeah. Okay, hey, there's a lot of books, though, that do have an allegory for that Hitler mustache twirling villain. There's plenty of those.
I don't think Hitler could twirl his mustache.
That's... All right, I'm two for two. Let's try for a third one. All right, let me... God, that's actually accurate.
Yeah.
The mustache rubbing. Yeah, it somehow doesn't work.
Yeah, he's real famous for that.
Yeah, okay. He's infamous for worse things, yes.
Yeah, like the Autobahn.
Did he make that?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I mean, did he make it, or
no,
did
commission
Nazi
it.
Well, Germany yeah, commission? Yeah. Yes.
They don't know that. Okay. Back to allegory. All yes. right. So with allegory, coming to you basically answering the question in this video saying, no, but yes.
No,
sometimes.
But yes.
Yes, but I like it. Like, really, really like it. Then yes. To get more precise about that.
To get more precise, allegory raises the bar.
Yeah.
It's a barrier. It makes the story, I think, harder. You're adding a barrier for the story. If it is interesting enough to do, go ahead and do it. But if it is, here's the main issue you want to avoid is when allegory is added in, and ultimately the allegory is either so on the nose and uninteresting and disconnected from the actual story you're trying to tell, and it feels like just a reference that's meaningful, but not meaningful to that story. That's when allegory is, I think, an actual negative and where most people can go wrong with it.
So let's break down these three to maybe four different reasons that allegory are used, and we can say when yes and when no.
Okay.
To get more specific about it. Because again, talking about defining allegory again, story, poem, picture that can be interpreted to reveal hidden meaning, typically a moral or political one. And that end part is important because that's where it gets to the more complex issues. And allegory being this tool to express this specific intent from the author. We will segue into the authorial intent at the end of this episode, no matter what. We just will. I'm sorry. But yes. So when talking about it, allegory is basically the author saying, I have a point to make. The author says this means this, and the reader has to put that together, whatever have you. The author's putting in very directly that this is a direct comparison to this thing in the real world. And the first thing that we were talking about earlier was using allegory to simplify complex ideas. That's one use of allegory, of making something complex and making it rather simple. When do you see that as a good thing or a bad thing in literature, in fiction?
I'll lean on the side of it's normally a bad thing in historical context. I think maybe For Children, probably good. Give an example. Animal Farm is that same usage of trying to make, you know, complex history and the faults of communism. Like, hey, let's make an allegory about a farmhouse and, like,
people understand farms, right?
Yeah, and simplify it. And it is something that can be read to much younger people.
Mm.
So you could take this concept of communism and shrink it down. And I think it works. It works there. But generally, you do run a risk. I don't know if I'm always the biggest fan of taking a very complex topic or something very sensitive and simplifying it down. Normally is fair. It's just lazy or boring or could be insulting.
Well, the flaws there about simplifying it is you can get it wrong easier if it's a very complex idea. Yeah. Because then somebody that's really interested in that topic, now, what things are you taking from, and that we've mentioned communism a lot, but it could be anything, right?
Yeah.
If you're, especially if you're really knowledgeable about something in the real world, and then this book is making an allegory can miss a lot of the complexities to it, which the advantage of that is, again, the simplifying and explaining something as a starter, or as something that makes you look at it in a new lens, because what stories are doing is giving new perspective of, okay, I didn't look at this from an animal's point of view or from what have you point of view.
It can also be boring if the allegory is for something just like you've seen it 100 times before. Of how many different allegories for Nazi Germany can you get? Like, oh, are the bad guys an allegory for the Nazis? Oh, such a novel idea. Does that add anything to a story? No. The Nazis are bad guys.
Sauron is not Stalin.
Great. Right. But like, does that elevate the material at all? No, it doesn't. Does it give you a more intriguing thought on the Nazis? No, it doesn't. The Nazis are still bad. It does nothing for both the story and for the historical point. So that's like the actual fault and like my problem with how allegory is used.
Of that simplifying nature of it?
Yep. And right. Where it does no service to both the historical, the actual reference, and the story itself.
Okay. Where would you say, okay, so you mentioned Lions of Al-Rasan where it worked for you.
Yeah.
Of why did that simplify? Because it really does simplify the idea of just, hey, here's, sure. And it's more of a historical fiction, but also fantasy. It draws the line of what exact genre mm-hmm. is it. But why would it work in a story like that? Without, we're not spoiling the story, but if you want to give the context for what that story is.
And sure.
Is allegory the right word there? I think so. Yeah. It pretty much is. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. The reason why it works there is it does simplify this more complex historical conflict, but it relates it far more to the the individual characters in our story and takes this. I don't think it really gives you any greater insight on the conflict, the historical conflict.
Doesn't try to say something about
so
the conflict.
It doesn't elevate the historical material, but the allegory does give elevate the actual story and directly relates to our characters and their struggle that they go like their how through their differing cultures, how they are pulled apart and how they try to have a closer relationship with each other and this friendship that's pulled apart by their separate cultures and histories. Mm. So it elevates the story, doesn't elevate the reference.
So, got it. Yeah.
Versus Animal Farm, I think. Simplifies and gives you a good understanding of communism for a certain audience.
Okay, got it. So that seems to be the crux of the simplifying thing. Could it ever bother you? Because I guess in Animal Farm or a story like that where it's just a direct one-to-one comparison and saying something about the real world, this is the thing that'll go on in my head. Now, I'll say this. When we read The Dispossessed, now, I didn't like the book. Other people did like the book. I think a way to put... is allegory the right term for that? I hope I'm using it correctly because it's one planet is allegory for capitalism, another is allegory. I mean, it's saying the word.
The word.
It says the word. So it's not even hiding the allegory. So it's not that either. That's why it's a strange usage of. Okay, I guess this is what it would be. It's an allegory for the United States or an allegory for Soviet Union. Or, you know, I the exact cultures in there, you can read the book yourself and say which one's an allegory for what. So it's more so an allegory for real world place, like AIO in there. The United States and like this place was...
The hierarchical planet or the... what would you call it? Because there's the... Not... The term for actually just... any system of governments with authority that actually uses force. But anyway, the actual hierarchical authoritarian planet is an allegory for both the U.S. and
Soviet Union at
Soviet
the time.
Union
right?
at
yeah.
the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And the anarchy planet was just the anarchy. But it's not an allegory for anything. It's just a thought experiment.
Right. And it was looking at versus a culture that's more saying something about our culture in the world. It felt more allegory in that way. And in a book like that where you see it right away and you're going, okay, this is saying something about the real world. This goes for Animal Farm as well, for all these kind of books, is immediately when I cue that as a reader, the immersions, it's less so about the immersion, more so me thinking, okay, the author is trying to make a point here, or the author is saying something, and now I'm more focused about, all right, how can I apply what they're saying to the real world? And same thing in Animal Farm. Yes, it simplifies the idea, but then, okay, apply what you're saying then to what you think of communism. And in this, it's then apply what you're thinking to what you think of capitalism and anarchism, anarcho-communism, whatever term you want to use in that world. So a part of the danger could be then, at least for the immersion side, which is why Tolkien's so against it, or Tolkien is against it, and it does get rid of this secondary world layer to where now I'm thinking, okay, this feels more like an essay now than it does fiction, where I'll say this for Orwell's, right? For Orwell's Animal Farm, that can feel more as an essay, a point, than it can a book, in the same way The Dispossessed feels more as an essay, a speech that's being told in this fictional world, of course, and people can feel immersed. But I will always have a layer of, okay, now I'm very focused on the theme. I'm very focused on what you're saying, because this is no longer just a story. It's not as subtle. Some of it. So that's definitely a point, because that does come to mind when I'm thinking allegory.
There's a bit of a shield that authors can have when they're writing a fictional novel. And it's, hey, give it the benefit of the doubt. It is a fictional world, so you're supposed to suspend your disbelief. And so if something comes up that maybe you don't know if it makes sense or not, or like, hey, I don't think that's realistic, but you go, hey, I'm going to suspend my disbelief because this is a fictional world. The minute you add a direct allegory, you don't really get that excuse anymore. And so you kind of can't play it both ways of, oh, this is a direct allegory for something, and then it goes in a direction that doesn't make sense for the actual historical context. You can start judging it based on your own world. And so when you start going, hey, this story actually doesn't make sense, these characters are not acting in a way that is realistic to our world, the author can't come at you and say, yeah,
it's fiction, bro.
It's fiction. Right. It's like, no, it's not anymore.
It's now
an allegory. Like, you were making a direct allegory to our own world, which means you're now playing by the real world's rules. And so, like, that's, you can't have it both ways.
And that's part of it with The Dispossessed of, well, now I'm thinking, what's realistic? How would this actually work in the real world? Not just, hey, it's fiction, just let it happen. Well,
no,
it's no longer more of an essay. So now I'm thinking about, okay, how to apply it, and now I'm making the point about more so, well, here's what I think of hierarchy, and this is why this doesn't work, because, anyways, that is definitely a big drawback, I would say.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
Say with allegory of war, it can be off-putting. You're not going to be as immersed in the world that you're creating, especially in fiction, because we're talking allegory in fictional worlds.
Yeah.
Fantasy and sci-fi, more specifically with our channel. But that's a big drawback. So if you're using allegory, you really have to lean into understanding your reader now is... When are you cueing your reader? Make sure that you're promising that to your reader. And then if you're promising that, just remember now they're going to apply their real world understanding to the book, because that is going to apply now. the rules are now open.
Yep.
You've opened fiction to...
to the real world.
The real world.
Now, on the flip side, where it works, if this allegory makes you think about your own world in a new way, that's some of the best experiences novel of where I didn't think about this thing in reality. But now with this fictional story, I have chewed on it. I think I understand the real world a little bit better, or at least it gave me enough something in my real world to think about. That has a lot of staying power. And when you have that, that's a lasting moment.
Is there an example you can think of top of your head for that? Or would you have to think a little bit more?
Right off the top of my head,
yeah.
Sun Eater.
At which allegory part? Without spoiling anything?
I will not spoil anything, but book six specific. Book six, the most important chapter.
Yeah, that moment.
That moment is
a bit of an allegory. Yeah.
It's fairly allegorical for our own, you know, philosophies in our own world that are actually their existence. And these kind of direct references, I didn't think about this way before. I understood it. I
get the allegory.
I understood it. I now emotionally felt the idea rather than just intellectually knew it.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely the best part of allegory.
But at the same time, well, someone could not like that and go, okay, now you're making this point. Now it's no longer, we're now in the real world and you're making a real world point. And now, hey,
and people that
you've opened up fiction and I don't like this, what you're saying about the real world.
And people that disagree and are not interested
and don't
by
find
that,
it thought provoking, right? Because then, for us, that chapter hits and we go, oh my goodness, what a compelling reason for that philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And what a compelling reason for that point in chapter 40. So, yeah, that's a great way of putting it. That is where you'll have allegory will deviate a lot in opinions, and it opens up the floodgates. And so,
yeah, thing is, I think that's where you actually get a good allegory usage, and I think that's just the cost of it. You're going to divide people on it. If your allegory doesn't divide anybody,
you did it wrong, right?
It's ultimately like, yeah, why bother then?
Well,
of like making your bad guys just an allegory for the Nazis. Who cares? Why do that? Everyone agree, like everyone's on the board. Nazis bad. Like, are you doing anything special? Is it you thinking about the Nazis in a new way?
And
no.
Our ad sponsored by every time you mention Nazi, now we have to do an ad. But the question for you is that next point of it, an advantage of allegory is said to be discussing sensitive topics indirectly. Do you think that is an advantage? Because are you able to talk about these sensitive topics indirectly?
What would you say is a good example that you can
indirectly?
Think of? Yeah,
well, in all the ones
being
that
able
we,
to, yeah, a sensitive way to talk about something.
Like Lines of Al-Rasan.
Sure,
that's more indirect. Obviously, it's an allegory for each one, but it's not making the point about the historical context and intricacies of the conflicts there. It's not making a further point. Like you said, it drew back to the character. So it's able to discuss the sensitive topic of religious conflict in general,
mm-hmm,
in an interesting way.
To me,
in a more sensitive way, rather than saying, hey, look at this. Yeah, go ahead.
To me, one of the best recent examples I can think of is By Blood, By Salt. I think it does. Mm. There's some allegorical references that I think are intended by the author. However, they're a little bit more removed, a little bit more hidden, or at least the line is blurred a little bit more than the lines of Al-Rasan, but it handles the internal oppressed religious conflict of the conflict within an oppressed religion, which is far, like, that's a sensitive topic. Mm. That is, imagine talking about our own world and taking an oppressed underclass, and not because this easy thing, the thing that's not really that sensitive, I think, is, hey, the oppressor's bad, the oppressed good. That's generally the simple one. That's, I don't think you don't need to be sensitive about that. The thing you need to be a bit more sensitive about is, hey, the oppressed subgroup, internal, what are the internalized impressions and negative traits that the oppressed group have toward each other, and the different internal warring factions, one faction wanting to capitulate to the oppressor, another wanting to fight, and that internal conflict, that's a sensitive topic. Mm-hmm. And By Blood, By Salt handles that idea really, really well. So,
and is part of that being in the real world, if you were to use an example of, especially talking modern history, if you're mm-hmm. bringing up modern history points, immediately when you mention, you know, Israel, Palestine, or any of the big names, it's okay, well, everyone's going to have an opinion on that. Mm-hmm. And now, how do you approach that? Because then that's where conversation shut down, where fiction can open you up to, okay, let me read some, instead of mentioning the Irish Civil War. Now I can talk about Red Rising.
Which is, I thought you were going to say
not an allegory.
But, I thought you were going to do the Banshees of Inisherin.
Actually, that's Banshees of Inisherin is a direct allegory for the Irish Civil War.
It's and so weird though.
It's an awesome movie.
It's a great movie.
It's
but
so good.
It's so on the nose, and also, if you didn't know about the history,
it still works though.
It works as a movie, but it's also just bizarre. Then mm-hmm. it's really bizarre,
mm-hmm.
but. Besides the point.
Yeah, besides the point. But yeah, there that is something important too, because when fiction is that way of discussing those sensitive topics, but when it, I guess that's the thing. So discussing sensitive topics indirectly, it's when it does feel more indirect. The allegory in By Blood, By Salt or any other book, it's not just, hey, this specific group of people. It's just more saying an oppressed and an oppressor, right?
Yeah.
It's filling in those roles. It's not saying like, hey, this is one area, this is the other.
To be fair, there are enough references that I think it is talking about specific groups.
Oh, and in that? Okay, I must have missed it then. So, hey, it was discussed well.
Yeah. I picked up on a couple where it's more indirect than Lines of Al-Rasan.
Okay.
But if you pick up enough of it, it's like, yeah, it's allegorical for a specific group.
Got it. But then in that same way of when you're talking about something specifically that is a modern issue,
mm-hmm.
then you could typically talk about it very well in a fiction book, because
especially if you want to talk about the idea that is, so there's plenty of themes and historical examples that have been repeated, you know, oppressed versus oppressor. That's not unique to any one group. However, if you talk about it a little bit too directly, if you use a modern example, people are only going to be hyper-focused on the current day politics rather than the actual point that maybe the author is trying to make a more broader idea and bring in multiple historical examples. And so that's a way to obfuscate it and not get people bogged down to the weeds of modern day politics.
And where's the flaw of that, of discussing those more sensitive topics indirectly? Is it when it does feel just more direct and you disagree with the thought on the sensitive topic? Is that where it gets dicey?
I don't know. I mean, I guess the flaw could be either way. What do you think is worse? One where they're too sensitive to the topic, where they actually don't really get the point across and they don't make any point because they're too light of a touch, or if it's they're not sensitive enough and so it's just kind of more direct. What do you think is worse?
I guess when you are, these both would be, mistakes at the point, right?
Sure.
So in the case where you're talking about an example where it works, where it wouldn't work, I think does go back to your, when we're using the Sun Eater versus Dispossessed comparison,
mm-hmm.
the loss of immersion, the person bringing it to the real world, when it is queued up that you get the allegory, you get what that Aslan's Jesus or whatever it might be, your real world opinions are immediately being brought into the book. And so you'll kind of be on the lookout of like what conforms to my confirmation bias, you know, what conforms mm-hmm. to my worldview. And then as you're reading it, we'll project that throughout a lot of the read possibly. And so with the, if you're going, if you discuss it too directly, that, I guess that's the extreme there. Now someone's going to be constantly thinking, if it's too indirect, you're opening up more, you're allowing people to get more immersed in it, but then the point might be missed, because then it's the purpose of whatever the author's intent was. Well, doesn't matter as much because the reader's taking it this way and applying it in this way.
I think the better avenue to go down with it, especially with a very sensitive topic, is a little bit more direct, but keeping it to the end, hiding it. So that's the narrative trick of like, if you're telling a story and you're targeting people that maybe would disagree with the allegory, that on the surface would, whatever your point you're trying to make, you're targeting the audience of whoever would disagree with it. And so what you do is you set up a narrative where you get the reader hooked emotionally into these characters, and you don't get, they're not thinking of the allegory. They're not thinking about it. They're now pulled in by these characters. It feels like an organic story being told. And then at the end, when the characters are faced with this, you know, you now realize what the allegory is about. The reader that will say, oh, before reading this book, I disagreed. And maybe I still disagree. But because of how this story presented itself, it forced me to see the other side. It forced me to consider the opposing opinion in a more charitable light, rather than just rather than a knee jerk of like, I disagree. It's, oh, I got tricked into seeing the other side's perspective. And I think that's a really effective narrative tool.
To show the allegory late.
Yes.
Now, it's also a dangerous tool, because where it would definitely not work is the rug pull moment of, you are invested in the story. You don't feel that you're promised that. You know, that could be done very poorly of, hey, I feel like I am promised this kind of story. And rug pull, wait, he's Jesus.
Yeah.
And now you feel tricked and duped, and you weren't here for a magic show.
Yeah.
You weren't here to watch a magician. You were here to read a story. And you feel like that story that you were immersed in the secondary world now just became something that's a direct analogy to the real world, and the author's trying to preach at you. It becomes preachy, didactic, and that's the thing that Tolkien doesn't want to do, is become didactic. Mm-hmm. And that is the moment where, hey, in your case, if it's the reading experience where, oh, okay, it didn't look, what a great story, and then at the end it happens, and it's this more eureka moment of, I didn't agree, but I love the story so much. Now my mind's changed. That can happen, but that's far more rare. That's far more rare. You'll get the extremes of, you'll get maybe somebody like that, but I think you'd get somebody that's a lot more willing to change their minds and open up if it's promised in some way that this is here. There's inklings of it. It doesn't just catch you off guard. Mm-hmm. Because I think that the reactions you'll get with that kind of use of the allegory will be bad for the most part.
Yeah, it has to be the great, always the great mystery moment is when the reveal happens. You didn't see it coming, but you fully understand, you get the aha moment of, oh,
it has to be promised in some way.
Everything comes together. That's the feeling you want to get. But if it feels it just came out of nowhere, then yeah, of course, it's just not going
to
work.
In that case, you have to use allegory in the same way of a plot twist. So.
Yeah.
A Game of Thrones, that plot twist that happens, which I still won't spoil, I guess. But that goes, oh, I can't believe it, but oh, it makes so much sense. Right.
Exactly.
And that's why when you have, going back to Animal Farm, where it's just from the get-go allegory and being really direct with it, you know what you're getting into. You know the promise of the story. You understand this is a direct allegory. So by the time you finish it, you went in there with the mindset constantly of, okay, it's making a point, it's making a point, it's making a point. By the end, you look at it versus that person that would read Animal Farm and the last page go, oh, wait a second. I think they're talking about.
They're talking about me.
Little old me.
I'm the pig. I'm the communist pig.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So I think that is more tricky. So I would kind of disagree in that way of that being the reactions, but.
I think that's the best case scenario of like that. That's a highlight way of using allegory, is forcing someone to see a disagreeable perspective. It forces them to go like, not, they can't just dismiss it out of hand.
Sure.
Immediately. Now they have an emotional connection to that side.
Well, how much in that too needs to be allegory versus needs to be a good story, right? Of, do you need an allegory to pull that off? Maybe not, because here's the thing, that kind of story where you'd have to throw that allegory in, that you might, like, the allegory might make it worse in the end there. Again, that secondary world Tolkien is talking about, where if you could just say simply, well, the ring is a representation of Rosetta Stone. Okay, that's not it at all. Or what people were actually saying of the five wizards equals the five what traits he was saying. Or the other example, oh yeah, the orcs are communists and communists are orcs. Mm-hmm. If that was the actual case, if orcs are communists and communists are orcs, That sucks.
It's lame.
That's so lame.
Yeah.
But the orcs representing this thing,
it's
you could
the corrupt, you know, this basically the
general
evil,
theme.
Evil cannot create, it can only corrupt. Mm-hmm. And that orcs are, by their nature, a corruption of good to create evil.
It's representing a theme, an idea, rather than that. So that, again, where the reader can then interpret in their own way and apply to their own experience of, oh, I see how this works in this way, in that way. Which that's where it gets us into the angle of what the author's intending and what the reader's getting out of it. I don't know how much you want to go there because every episode, right?
Yeah.
But that is, allegory is a direct way of saying, hey, me, the author, I am stating this, whether you get it or not, this is what I mean.
Yeah.
So for an incorrect interpretation, we could say for orcs do not represent beauty.
True.
Or goodness. We could say that at least, and people would generally agree.
Yeah. There's not complete subjectivity.
Yes, there's not complete subjectivity with it.
Yeah.
But what do you think about that? Because what does allegory make as a point about the intent of an author?
It's the far more direct way. It's like, if you find the allegory, it's very much the author is telling you
what the
story means, mm-hmm. or at least what that part means.
Mm-hmm.
So
do you feel
part
that
of it is less fun.
Mm-hmm.
If you enjoy the investigation process, if you enjoy puzzling and like, ooh, what is the author's intent in here? Like, I'm trying to figure out what their perspective is. And that's if you enjoy that part, then finding the allegory often is more of a letdown of, oh, okay, I now understand, and now move on. The mystery's gone.
Versus another scenario where there's no allegory and it's just a story. Now that allows for more reader's interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
It allows the reader to then take that, apply it to their life with more liberty, with more. It allows that much more than if it was just narrowed down into view. So then when someone reads something, they can apply that in a thousand ways rather than in a couple or in one. Then what do you see as the advantage of having no allegory? Does that more so show, hey, maybe the intent of the author shouldn't be as forced or known? Is it more fun to just not know what the author thinks? Don't take into account what the author thinks, just interpret it as you read it, just by the text, and then you're able to apply that and make the meaning of what you make of it. The general theme of what the orcs are, apply that in your life. Are orcs, what obstacle are your orcs? Are the orcs your the coworkers, or the boss? Is it your mom who's not letting you get out at midnight, not letting you stay up till midnight? Whatever the representation of that is in your life.
Hmm.
How do you take that?
I guess, what is the author's intent? Are they trying to, if they want to enlighten the readers and try, if they're trying to teach something and they want to teach in a more creative way, then they use allegory through their story, and that the purpose is to educate. That's a certainly valid way to, it's more of a fun way to tell a story as well, or it's a more fun way to teach something is using allegory in a story. I mean, Hall of Aesop's Fables is basically, you know, using, you know, allegorical, you know, the frog and the scorpion. It's probably one of my favorite little allegorical stories of, it's, you know, direct actual lesson and taking from the real world, but like it's using these animals to get an actual lesson. So there's that purpose. And I think that is the far more valid way to do something. When you take like a sci-fi author that's using, like, trying to explain in a more narrative fun way a complex scientific topic and educate someone on like, hey, I've been thinking about this scientific principle and worrying over it, and like for people to understand it, the best way to do that is with a story instead of just, you know, an academic paper. I think that's probably the best case scenario for it is, but then the other end is, hey, I'm going to use this allegory to heighten the emotions of my story. You're running a greater risk that way.
Is it more true, and let me keep making the point on this, but is it more true that all stories are either allegories or very hidden allegories? For example,
at what point does an allegory become just inspiration? Yeah.
So for Tolkien and what the ring represents in Tolkien's life or his Catholic faith. And the reason Tolkien was able to write Lord of the Rings, uniquely.
Mm-hmm.
So what in his life was the representation? What was the ring to him? Now, he makes the ring temptation, right?
Yeah.
It is, and you could take with you what is tempting you in your life, Rich. What's tempting me? And we could see that ring as a representation and a theme. The theme just a broad allegory? because then you have in his life
the Catholic religious thing of ultimately man is not able to conquer evil alone, that it requires divine intervention, that like man cannot conquer their sins alone. That it requires God. That's the ending of Lord of the Rings. That's kind of, is that an allegory? Well, is that just that's Tolkien's worldview, and so that's inspired into his world.
And that inspiration versus the allegory. The allegory is the more direct one to one, but again, with those general themes and the ideas that we take away and are able to apply to our lives, you're able to apply it more because it's not as focused. It's not as just, hey, this is exactly what it is, rather than showing the broad term of temptation, having a more wide use. So if you say communism, the orcs are communists, which is what was said Tolkien was responding to, that makes it so narrow and going, okay, well, I have an opinion about communists versus, well, the orcs represent evil or the orcs represent this. This idea, then the reader can then take away more from that. But at the same time, Tolkien, when he's writing the orcs or writing the ring and having his upbringing, clearly all of that was inspired. And he had, when he was talking about having any battle sequences, he would say it's not a direct allegory for World War One or World War Two. It's not, was not an allegory for those wars.
But it did inspire him.
Certainly. He was in the Battle of the Somme. He was in World War One, and him having that experience, did that lead him to write that? But it's different, right? He doesn't want everybody to read that and go, hey, that's World War One right there. Because you can apply that war to Vietnam, to Afghanistan. Why not just war in general rather than this war? That's what it allows you to do more so than just narrowing it down.
It sounds like to me you lean far more with Tolkien of, in general, most of the time, allegory is the worst option to use. Is that correct to say?
Oh, I still from what I said at the beginning. It depends on the story.
It depends, but if you were to lean somewhere.
Sure, I'll lean that way. I'll lean against allegory, but I don't mind it if it's going, but I just know, hey, it's the, okay, maybe this in fiction. In fiction, I lean less direct allegory. However, if there is allegory, the cases that we've brought up so far, make sure the point isn't obfuscated because the lines of Al-Rasan where that works, or I guess more of the direct allegory
Definitely, I don't know if this is a hard and fast rule, but it is kind of how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
If your story features a lot more of a, if it's more about a direct allegory,
yeah,
I expect it to be shorter.
There you go too. Yeah.
There's a specific reason behind it.
Yeah.
If you're using allegory, you're sacrificing immersion.
Yeah.
The point of having a lot of pages in a, you know, fictional, like in a sci-fi and a fantasy story, the reason why they're thick is because it's more to get you immersed into the world. And that's the point of it. Like,
good point.
I'm spending all these pages to be immersed and to feel like this world is real and a secondary world. If you bring in an allegory and like, oh, the whole point is this, why bother? Why bother? I don't think you should try so hard to immerse your reader then into that world if you're just going to use a more direct allegory anyway.
And I would say I don't like the case of just throwing in the allegory at the end either. The more I'm thinking about that, the more I don't like that. And I think at the beginning of this episode, I didn't have much opinion, but I definitely lean toward, in science fiction and fantasy, generally speaking, against allegory.
Yeah, unless it's short.
Short, there's certainly ways to make it work, but that's the specific thing too, the focus on it being fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the thing. With it being fiction, I lose some of the fiction, or I lose some of the sci-fi fantasy aspect as soon as allegory is brought in. When that's brought in, I feel more real world than I am in the immersion, and it breaks something. And it can be done well, but it's harder. It's more difficult to be done well. Yeah, that's my opinion on it.
Yeah. Well, hey, we finally actually got to an answer, not just a pure it depends. We lean toward generally no, unless you can do it really well.
Same thing you said earlier. But hey, we explained it more.
We explained it a little more. Basically, you do it at the cost of your immersion. Tread carefully. That is the ultimate PSA from this video.
Well, that was the lesson of the day. Now tell us what you think down below. And this will be an engagement, actually. I'm curious, what side do you all take on this?
Yeah.
Generally more for, generally more against. Do you understand the points of for and against? All that kind of stuff. All right. That's been another Tutor Ramble episode.
Bye-bye, everyone.
See ya.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.